Dominating its skyline was a seven-tiered pyramid, Acapana, laid out in a pattern perhaps inspired by the Andean cross. Ubiquitous in Highlands art, the Andean cross is a stepped shape that some claim is inspired by the Southern Cross constellation, and others believe represents the four quarters of the world. Whatever the case, Acapana's builders planned with a sense of drama. They constructed its base walls with sandstone blocks, the array interrupted every 10 feet by rectangular stone pillars that are easily 10 feet tall. So massive are the pillars that the first European to see Tiwanaku, Pedro de Cieza de León, later confessed himself unable to understand or fathom what kind of instruments or tools were used to work them. Rising from the center of a large moat, Acapana mimicked the surrounding mountains. A precisely engineered drainage system added to the similarity by channeling water from a cistern-like well at the summit down and along the sides, a stylized version of rainwater plashing down the Andes. Atop an adjacent, somewhat smaller structure, a large walled enclosure called Colas Asaya is the soi-disant Gateway of the Sun, cut from a single block of stone, now broken in two and reassembled. Covered with a fastidiously elaborate frieze, the 12-foot gateway focuses the visitor's eye on the image of a single deity whose figure projects from the lintel, the staff god. Today, the Gateway of the Sun is the postcard emblem of Tiwanaku. During the winter solstice, June in South America, hundreds of camera-toting European and American tourists wait on Colas Asaya through the entire freezing night for the sunrise, which is supposed to shine through the gateway on that date alone. Guides in traditional costume explain that the reliefs on the lintel form an intricate astronomical calendar that may have been brought to Earth by alien beings. To keep themselves warm during the inevitable longueurs, visitors sing songs of peace and harmony in several languages. Invariably, the spectators are stunned when the first light of sunrise appears well to the side of the gateway. Only afterward do they discover that the portal is not in its original location and may have had nothing to do with astronomy or calendars. If those tourists had come to Tiwanaku at its height, walking through the miles of raised fields surrounding it to the city's carefully fitted stone walls, they would have been delighted by its splendor. But it might also have seemed curiously incomplete, with half the city falling down and in need of repairs, and the other half under construction. Modern drawings of ancient cities tend to show them at an imagined apogee, the great monuments all splendidly arrayed together, perfect as architectural models. But this is not what Tiwanaku looked like, nor even what it was meant to look like, according to Isbell and Vranich. From the very beginning, the two men wrote in 2004, the city was partly in ruins, intentionally so, because the fallen walls bequeathed on Tiwanaku the authority of the past. Meanwhile, other parts of the city were constantly enveloped in construction projects, which testified to the continued wealth and vitality of the state. Sometimes these projects acquired construction materials by cannibalizing old monuments, thereby hastening the process of creating ruins. In the Andean tradition, labor was probably contributed by visiting work parties. Periodically, ritual feasts that included much smashing of pottery interrupted the hubbub of construction, but it always continued. They build their monuments as if their intent was never to finish them, the Spanish academic Polo de Ondegardo marveled in 1571. Exactly right, Isbell and Vranich said. Completion was not the object. The goal was a constant buzz of purposeful activity.